Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
And we're going to talk about the midlife crisis today. And nothing to do with either of us. So will we get
miles
out of the way first?
We're miles away from it.
On opposite sides of it, I'd say. Now, firstly, not a joke. There's the stereotype of the middle-aged man buying a sports car. Probably not helpful, actually.
Well, the middle-aged man buying the sports car. To me, I was always fascinated by that as an idea of a crisis. To me, that's thriving. You know what I mean? Who the hell can afford a sports car when they're 22?
Okay, that guy's winning, actually.
That guy's life winning here.
We're laughing at him. He doesn't care.
Exactly.
Okay. But it's a real thing.
It is a real thing, yeah. It is a real thing. I suppose I find the word crisis in there, you know, I think across the species, in middle age, there's a disquiet. It can be a shattering disquiet and it can be an incredible uneasiness. And often it's kind of muted. It's not spoken. In my experience working clinically with it, I'd meet men who have never uttered what they utter in the clinic, in the therapy room. This incredible sense of despair that's going on in their lives. And how they manage those feelings, because that's across the species. You know what I mean? That goes across the species in middle age, I think. And of course, throughout our life journey and the different transitions, we have moments where we ask, who am I? What am I about? What do I want to do? What are my values? What am I, you know, what do I want in my life next? So all of those things kind of create that life transition and we start to question. It's what we do to those questions either create a thriving or a crisis. That's the thing. It's not, I mean, having those questions isn't a crisis.
Okay.
That's the first thing I want to say to people. Having those questions, having that uneasiness, that unsettled feeling, you know, that's normal across, you know, that's a normal kind of, that universal exploration for meaning is absolutely a normal thing to have across the species, you know, in midlife, let's say. That's normal. But it's how we meet those questions, what we do to satiate those questions, that's where the crisis kind of occurs.
Okay. What might people be feeling? How will they know that this is coming on them? I would say, from the people in my life, a little bit malaise seems to creep in, like that it's a low-key thing rather than an
explosion.
It is.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's why I'm saying it's kind of like this quiet, muted kind of a thing. And also, it can be hard to articulate that malaise. You know, what is that? How do I actually heave that into my tongue and make that, you know, so someone can comprehend it? What's that? And it can be, for sure, you know. And that's probably a very good description of it, because we all think about the person who explodes their life or does something extraordinarily out of character and we think, well, that was a midlife crisis. But for the most of us, it's that little bit of malaise. It's that inability to kind of understand what it is that you're feeling, I think.
And does it rock people's confidence a bit too?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because, you know, I suppose when you think about it, when we start out in life, Brendan, we're kind of given this ABC, and then if you get to D, it's all going to be this treasure of like life meaning. And that's not generally what happens. We get told to go to school, get a job, get the house, get the car, get the wife, get the partner, get the kids. And then there's the kind of like the treasure of all of that at the end of it. And that can be actually a profound thing when you kind of come to that and say, I think I'm at the apex of adult life here and maybe I don't feel so great. And what I'd always say to that is maybe it's the external world isn't bringing you the satisfaction that you thought it might bring you. Maybe the internal world is knocking. This is where I see it. This is how I reframe it from crisis to kind of like almost chrysalis.
Yeah.
This is the way I see it. You know, move from crisis to chrysalis. Because that knocking where there's something internally coming up for you, that's something to listen to. That is something to listen to. And what is that? You know, so we get told that the external world will give us all this gratification. And when we're 20 or 24 maybe, and we get something big, we buy a nice car, we get a little dopamine hit, you know, we get that. That's the reward center of the brain and all that kind of stuff. But as we move into a later middle part of our life, that stuff mightn't give us the kind of same kind of satisfaction. All of a sudden, those things that we have don't give us that satisfaction. And so that inner world starts to knock. You know what that is? That's the authentic self. I always think you got to listen to that knocking. What is it? What's it saying to you? Don't be frightened of that.
Okay.
It's not going to mean you're going to explode your world. It's have a listen to it. What's coming up for you there?
So what I'm hearing here then is that this is the opportunity for the second life.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
It?
Yeah, the second. That's the way. Or maybe even your first life, because as Carl Jung says, you know, life begins. This is actually what Carl Jung says: life begins at 40, because all the years before that was just a bit of research. And he's, you know, he's kind of right, I think, for sure. And I say, when you're hitting your 40s, yeah, that's it. I think there's the chance here to really start to thrive, because you know what, Brendan? There's such a stigma around them, that idea of the guy in the car and the soft-backed 9/11 and all this kind of idea of a guy in his middle age living this youthful life. There's such a stigma around aging. I mean, that's the roots of like the midlife crisis. There's such, you know, it's anti-aging cream. It's not pro-aging cream. It's anti, everything is designed around the idea of you shouldn't get old, and that there's such a deficit. Once you hit 50, you hear these ideas, it's all downhill. You're kind of going, what the hell? It's all downhill. We're missing out on the bounty of it all.
So is it a cultural kind of construct then? Is it more a first world kind of thing?
Well, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know what I mean? You know, if they're not being met, like, you know, shelter and food and all that kind of stuff, you're not going to think about self-actualization. And so, let's say, in the first world, we have all that stuff generally. And so self-actualization is kind of like what we're kind of trying to hit at. And I do think there's a cultural aspect to it, because I work in the Philippines a lot. I wouldn't be seeing this kind of stuff about the middle-age crisis, and that's not what I would witness there.
They're
too busy trying to get food and, you know, trying to live. Like, exactly. And so we're thinking, which is a great thing, self-actualization. That's a fantastic thing to be kind of dealing with, but not to be frightened of, and don't let the stigma around ageing. I mean, Jesus, I always think of, like, you know, Timon and Blake banging on the wall. That's what I want to be doing as I get a bit older. I'm not terrified of this thing. I'm aware that there's a thing called death at the end of it, but that actually motivates me to kind of actually think, this is the gift that I'm going to really kind of get as much out of this as I can. And I think we tell our children that they have to be perfect and they have to follow this kind of trajectory. And it's like, no, you know, step off at a time, challenge yourself. The antidote to the midlife crisis is not compromising when you're a kid, you know, when you're not in school and not falling into jobs and not falling into relationships, being more intentional about what you want to bring into your life. That's the antidote to all of this stuff. Be more aware of, like, life meaning. You know, I'm talking with teenagers all the time, and I see a huge bunch of them, they all want to be engineers. I'm thinking, surely not all of them want to be, you know, engineers. Surely there's some and there who want to do other things besides that as well. And they get caught living what they think people expect of them. That, to me, is the roots of, like, dissatisfaction at around mid-40s, when you look around and think, is this the job I wanted to do? Is this what I had in my mind to do when I was starting out here?
I know, but you see, you're missing a very important point here, which is that we know that now, that if we had our time over again, knowing what we know now, but you can't tell them, like, they'll do what they did. So let's just take it that we're at the point. Does it tend to be, like, a life event or something kicks this off for people?
I mean, it can be a profound encounter with mortality. It can be a diagnosis, you know.
That's
what I mean?
The classic.
Exactly. Or it could be your partner profoundly, as we've talked about here, letting you down. That could be a profound thing, you know. An affair is discovered in the relationship. That's a profound life experience. So, I mean, it can come, but I'd say in my experience working clinically, it's more subtle than that. It's quieter than that.
Does it tend to come on, people, from what you're seeing?
I always go back to this because it's what I see all the time. It's like when I'm working with adolescents, it's always 15, and when I'm working with adults, it's always around 47. And the research would say 47.2.
That's the danger zone there.
Because, you know, but the good news here for people is that is a U-shaped kind of arc of happiness. It kind of starts decreasing around 23 and moving downwards, and by 47, it's kind of at its nadir. It's at the bottom there. But then, of course, it starts to come back up again. And all the research would say those in their 50s, Brendan, are much happier than those in their 40s, and those in their 60s are ecstatic altogether.
Okay, so remember that the best is yet to come.
The best is yet to come, exactly.
Now, I think a lot of what's going on when I see my peers, you've identified five actual life circumstances that tend to come at midlife, and these are also things that, work stress.
Yeah, of course. Work stress can be incredibly profound and life-altering.
Yeah, and we're probably at the high point of it, possibly.
You're absolutely at the high point, at mid-40s, because you're probably striving to get to where you always had the hope, right? So there's that life expectancy as an expectation, and then your children are probably a bit older, and so they're relying on you less, and, you know, what we've talked about here before, intimacy drops down between the couple.
Let's explore a few of them. The children not needing you as much, and then ultimately gone.
Yeah.
Again, I suppose I'm starting to see this. It's a hugely profound thing for people, isn't it?
I've experienced it myself.
And they completely don't expect it.
I've been writing about this, Brendan, for years. And yeah. I've been saying, it's about having a different relationship through adolescence. I felt it profoundly this year as my daughter went into secondary school and really wasn't coming to me for any advice. And I was trying to like drill in and, you know, ask her questions about what's going on in her life and getting monosyllabic responses. I found that really hard. If I'm being honest,
had you built your life too much around your kids then? So which is probably a lot of people do in a certain phase.
If I'm being honest, I probably didn't. But that would be coming from my own childhood and all that kind of stuff, my own upbringing and all that. And I did. You know, I love being around my kids. That's for me where I'm happiest. And I've just found that. I've been writing about it for so long. I found that very hard. And I had to really talk with myself and work with through myself and kind of going, this is a great part of the life experience, right? The journey in life, and this is her moving towards agency. So I had to kind of talk to myself about that.
Which it's people's whole identity.
It can become, of course, because you're dad and you're a colossus. You know what I mean? For so many years, you're the fountain of all knowledge. I mean, and you're completely right. You're never wrong when they're 6 or 7. And then when they're 13, it's like, what the hell do you know?
Okay, okay. So that's going to rock people. Yeah. Then the intimacy in relationships.
Yeah, that really, I think, of all the things that I work with in couples, that is the most profound, right? And it is the most unsettling for the couple and can cause huge isolation.
Okay.
Huge isolation.
So people lonely in their own
really lonely
marriages
in their marriage. Because, you know, intimacy and being intimate with someone is such a healing thing and it's such a connecting thing. Our brain is wired for that. You know what I mean? We're wired to kind of have that intimacy with somebody and to be that connected to somebody physically and emotionally. And so when the physical aspect drops down, which of course it does, your libido changes. I mean, you're not the same person you were when you were 20. You're out there running around. You know what I mean? It's a different guy there or a different woman there. And there's lots of things going on for both sexes. The testosterone is decreasing about 1.1 to 2%, you know, every year past 40s. Of course, the menopause is at work here. And that causes all sorts of swirling hormones going on. So for both, and probably more profound for women, I would think, the 40s can be a kind of a time where intimacy is, again, unlike, you know, it just dips and there can be a real, and I meet it so much, I'm kind of like feeling it as I say it. That isolation, Brendan, it's profound.
Okay, so that's another grown
huge thing,
so well worth working. Sounds like the wrong word, but
as much as you can, trying to have those conversations around, you know, how you're feeling around this and how to kind of maybe maintain more intimacy together. It's so important.
Okay. Fewer friends or less contact with friends can be a thing at this point in life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly for men, I think Irish men are very bad at holding on to friends, particularly in their 40s. I think you can look around in your mid-40s and think, geez, where are all my friends kind of gone? Where was that network that I had when I was younger? Because we get caught chasing that idea out there that, you know, that's the treasure at the end of this, the big job, the big promotion, all of that, the busyness of life, we get caught with that soul focus and there's further isolation. And I would sit and, you know, genuinely sit with men in my clinic who are 40s and 50s who are, like, you know, emotionally, you know, like weeping in the therapy session because they've no friends in their lives.
None. So loneliness.
Again, profound loneliness. Yeah, I think. Because, you know, I think women are a lot better at maintaining those friendships and they work harder at them. I think men feel there's a bit of a stigma to that, you know, in some ways, you know.
Okay.
Reaching out to someone.
Work again.
Again.
I think
you have to be more intentional about it because all of this stuff can kind of lead to this perfect storm of looking around, isolated, having these feelings, uneasy feelings, unable to express them.
Okay, and then the last one, number 5, which happens to people as well at this point, is elderly parents.
Mm.
Can be dementia, can be other kind of
the demands of an elderly.
And
I lived this myself, you know, my grandmother who lived with us, the demands of an elderly parent and all that can be particularly problematic. And of course, if there's an illness in there as well, but not even that. And I would work with so many, women in their 40s. And I'd always say that the good daughter, the good wife, the good mother, the good sister. It's an unbelievable paradigm to try to live and try to live up to, trying to be perfect and try to never say no to things. And your parents are elderly and you're trying to be that good daughter again. And it's even more profound because you've got these kids to look after and this relationship trying to maintain. And it can be completely all consuming. And when I work with it, I often say, and where are you in all of that? And that's a lot of silence, I'll tell you that, because they're lost.
Really, yeah. Mm. Yeah, okay. So people need to, the answer to that is to just, is it as simple as make time for yourself? It should be the first thing you build into your day or your life, shouldn't it?
Self-care is not selfishness. I think women in particular are programmed very early on in their life to think that to say no and all that kind of stuff is selfishness, because the whole system wants them to be the good, responsible daughter, whatever it is. And we have to kind of work that out of our system, because it's a kind of an internalized thing there. And saying no actually is a very important part of it, of having a healthy life. Because if you say yes to everything, your yes has no value anyway. And so you don't value yourself. And so you have to find that in you to move towards that discomfort of saying no to people, and I can't do that, and maybe somebody else has to pick up the slack there. I can't take all of that on, because when you're taking everything on, you begin to kind of resent people for allowing you to be like that, and you resent yourself too. So it's about protecting yourself. That's self-care.
Okay, so we've kind of probably been a bit man-centred about the idea of the midlife crisis, because it was traditionally kind of a stick to beat men with.
So
this is happening women too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And maybe even more profoundly, but it was never articulated. And maybe just put down to the menopause and that kind of stuff. You know, the way that stigma around all of that kind of stuff. Oh, that's just that, you know, chemical imbalance or hormonal thing or whatever that. And it's ridiculous. Of course there's questioning. And that's what I'm saying to you at the start there. That's a universal, the search for meaning. The looking for things outside the external other that might be an internal thing. That's across our species and that's across gender. Of course it is.
Okay, we've got some texts here. Guy says the huge thing in midlife is divorce. Absolutely shattering experience for men.
Yeah.
I'm just shattering for everyone. I'm a single mom. My youngest is doing their leaving cert this year. I'm dreading her leaving home. I work part-time. So frightened of the empty evenings and no reason to get up in the morning. Will you please ask your guest, does he have any guidelines for a middle-aged man? Okay, this is a hard one, right?
Okay.
With a terminal diagnosis, who's studying very much to get the best out of what's left in life.
Advice for that?
Yeah.
I think that's exactly it. And I'm sorry to hear that, that diagnosis. I'm very sorry to hear that. But that's what I would say is that's absolutely it.
Get the best, drain
the marrow from the bone there every last minute. I think we should probably all live a bit like that in some ways. That's what I would say there.
That's a tricky one.
And I would say stay connected to your loved ones, and try to have those moments together, because that's the meaning of life there.
Yeah. You often think people who are sick or whatever, they know they have the ultimate clarity on what's important anyway.
Exactly.
All the bull is gone.
Absolutely.
For them. Yeah. Listen, back to the midlife crisis. You say romanticising of the past is a big symptom and a big issue.
I mean, it's a kind of like a pathological romance with the past, where you see yourself as some sort of Adonis or whatever, and everything was fantastic and life was much better, which is, of course, nostalgia. You look back on it through these kind of tinted glasses. And then, of course, when you look ahead, the years ahead are like a frightening kind of waste or whatever. But the years behind were these golden, what's the Bruce Springsteen song?
Glory days.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you're living in this idea of the glory days. Again, that's just a bit of, it's not correct logic. The years ahead are something that should be actually really exciting you. It's not what's behind. That's done. That's past. That can never be repeated. That's where the crisis maybe comes in, Brendan, because you get stuck in this paradoxical behaviour, trying to relive something that cannot be relived. And that causes all sorts of problems in your life.
Would you have advice for the partner of somebody who's undergoing a midlife transition?
Yeah, so I suppose
because,
that's it.
These things are often harder to live with than the actual so-called sufferer themselves.
But you see, the thing is, when you say crisis, you see, that's where I get kind of stuck in the idea, because I work with so many people who come into me and think, they say to me, I think I'm having a midlife crisis, I want to change my job. And I'm like, that's not a midlife crisis. Well, let's have a look at your job. Do you like the job? And so maybe we got to be careful how we label, the desire to do something else. That's not a crisis.
Okay.
It's a crisis if I decide I want to turn around and start to become a fisherman and leave my family. And all
yeah.
That.
So okay, put crisis aside. But somebody who is trying to support someone through this or whatever without their hoping their life isn't going to get blown
exactly.
up.
Exactly. And that's the fear. I get that, of course, that they're going to blow up the whole life and put us all into debt and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I'd find out, what the why of it. You know, I'd sit down with my partner and ask, you know, what are the feelings here? And, you know, if it's about changing a job or, you know, whatever's happening there, I'd sit down and chat with them. But maybe even here, Brendan, you know, if you're very worried about it, you might even go into somebody and have a kind of a talk clinically around it. So you've got someone there to mediate the conversation and to really, you know, drill into what's coming up for your partner, because they might find it hard to articulate to you, you know, in the couple. So maybe it might be about sitting down with someone and having a conversation where they can actually kind of like, you know, hold that really sensitive conversation.
Okay, so actually having a kind of a neutral party in the room might give one person an excuse to say the stuff they're afraid to say.
Yeah, exactly, because they might be terrified to express what's going on. That's my experience of it clinically, is that it's this kind of like really silent, subtle thing that's been drilling around, droning on there for years, and they're finally beginning to kind of like listen to it and you begin to hear it then clinically in the space there.
Okay, now, obviously everyone... Most people get past this.
Here's the good news.
Yeah.
Here's the good news.
So when and how do people kind of tend to come out of it?
Well, it's going to resolve. It will resolve anyway. That's the nature of these phases. Like, I mean, they do resolve naturally, you know. Generally around 54, 55 is kind of where the arc starts to come back up again. You get more perspective on your life and all that. So it will resolve itself. But I think it's really important if there's something knocking there, you know.
Yeah.
Listen to it.
Like, it strikes me that you can come out of this in one of two ways. You can come out of it having listened and maybe having changed a few things within reason, or you can come out of it having endured it and get on stoically
suppressed
with the rest of your
exactly.
life.
Exactly. And this is the way I always think of James Campbell's. I don't know if you ever heard of the he has this archetypal hero's journey, and he says through all mythology there's a monomyth that, you know, the hero is living in this really comfortable life and something is unsettling them, and they go off to figure out what that is, and on that journey they experience suffering a little bit, they experience some wisdom and insight, and they come back again into the community and they've gained a real gift of their knowledge from that little bit of adventure. And I think that's midlife. That's what it is if you kind of like lean into it and listen to it. Because if there's a knocking there, which we all have, I have it and I listen to it and I try to kind of go, well, how can I bring this into my life without like blowing up my life? How can I kind of like, you know, have this in a healthy way? And that's the way to think about it. How can I get into that thing that I've always wanted in a healthy way that's not like, you know, manic or obsessive, but how can I bring it into my life in a kind of a way that it works in my life without disrupting it too much?
Yeah. And then I think we can refashion ourselves then as kind of the sage. After
absolutely.
That, I think our next phase is
exactly
kind of, is the sage.
The next part is it breeze then.
Yeah, yeah. There's the texture here. Says, what age does middle age begin? Well, there's the
52.
Question. Yeah, 52. Okay.
There's the answer.
I believe it's closer to 60 now at this
stage.
Yeah,
well, maybe, possibly.
It up all the time. It's moving up as I get older. If your whole life has been a crisis, do you avoid the middle age crisis? I can actually speak to this with authority. My whole life has been a crisis. Honestly, it has. Like, I've been firefighting my whole life. And you know what? At this stage... You're kind of good at it.
Yeah.
Like, so actually...
You've got the memory of it.
I actually think the midlife crisis has been the least of the
the
crises I've dealt with. I'm an old hand at this stage. So listen, anyone younger now listening, let's give them that bit of the bit of preventative advice so that we could give them about how not to end up
now,
in this situation.
Now, listen good to us here now, because we're speaking from the mountaintop here of middle age.
The sages.
The sages who've been through the journey. The antidote to all of this, Brendan, is not giving in. You know, it's not just compromising. It's not giving up on yourself. It's not just that sense of like, you know, just give, you know, that's what happens to people. That's the malaise. They think there's nothing better except for this, what they're doing now. Because we kind of fall into our college sometimes. We fall in, we do the degree for a couple of years. We don't even like it. And then we think I am in blood, stepped in so far that I should wade more, right? I can just keep going on and going on. I would say, no, don't do that. Try to think about what you actually want to manifest into your life as a young person and go after that, because what that is will bring all of the life satisfaction and meaning and money and all that kind of stuff that we pursue, that will follow. But you can get all that by, you know, really tapping into what it is you're about, what you like, what are your interests, follow those things and the rest shall unfold.
Okay, they're not listening. They're not listening.
Not
okay,
listening.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.